You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Most people have already settled into the lifelong career path by their late 30s, but it wasn't until he was 37 that Jonathan Dixon left behind being a staff writer for Martha Stewart Living and a writing instructor at Pratt Institute to enroll at the Culinary Institute of America. His memoir, Beaten, Seared, and Sauced, on becoming a chef at the Culinary Institute of America, chronicles the daily challenges and occasional triumphs of the 2 years he spent at the CIA. The book is published by Clarkson Potter, and I'm pleased to welcome him to our show. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for having me.
So as a writer on food, had you felt frustrated because you really wanted to do the cooking?
Well, I'd had an obsession with cooking since I was a kid, and I wanted to develop that obsession as far as I could possibly take it. So the CIA seemed like a great way to take it to an end point.
Well, don't you have to be knowledgeable to write about food? Because you weren't just writing about it for Martha Stewart, you're writing for other publications as well.
Sure. I thought that if you are going to write about something, it would behoove you to know what you're talking about.
And you were not always doing that?
I was doing it to the best of my ability, but I wanted to become more proficient, more knowledgeable.
And of course, if things didn't work out, you could always return to writing.
True. And I'd always eat well.
And were you writing during the 2 years you were at the CIA?
Well, when I started at the CIA, I had thought I had had fiction training and I wanted to keep doing that. And I thought I will do fiction in the morning and I will do my classes in the afternoon because they were all at night. But it became apparent to me rather quickly that I couldn't keep making that mental switch, but I really had the graphomaniac urge to keep writing. So I started keeping a blog, and the book grew out of that.
Did you assume you would write a memoir as a result?
No, I had no idea. I went to school strictly as a student, strictly for pursuit of knowledge. There was no ulterior commercial motive or ulterior artistic motive.
There are a number of highly regarded culinary schools in New York City. Why did you choose the CIA?
I thought that if I was going to turn my life upside down, which I was certainly going to do by dropping everything and going to school, that if I was going to turn it upside down, I should really turn it upside down. And the CIA was the longest of the programs and seemed like the most rigorous, and I went for that.
It's also incredibly expensive, isn't it?
It is, but I have to credit the fine folks at the CIA Financial Aid Department because they were exceedingly generous with financial aid.
What's the application process like for a culinary school? Do you have to cook?
No. The only real requirement was that you had worked 6 months in a restaurant and or some kind of food environment. And they were off. They were pretty liberal with their interpretation of that. One of my classmates had worked as a cashier at Panera Breads, and that was
a cashier?
Yes, and that was her food experience.
So she wasn't even in the back in the bakery.
Right. And that was fine. I guess they figured if she stuck it out that long, then she was interested in food and she was welcomed aboard.
And I'm assuming your qualification was that you'd written for Martha Stewart Living. But that's not the food part of the Martha Stewart.
No,
empire.
But I had worked in a restaurant. After I had left Martha Stewart and I was teaching, in my spare time I went to a restaurant in Brooklyn, Northeast Kingdom, which is still there. And as I always say, I would spend hours turning big vegetables into little vegetables afternoon.
Well, learning how to chop vegetables is an important part of learning how to be a good cook, isn't it? Did you have to study much before you applied, or was it just simply?
No, it was a lot like applying to any other school.
I'm assuming that most of the students were younger than you.
I would say roughly they were in general half my age.
So did that that can be rather unpleasant. They look upon you as the old guy.
Yeah, I was often referred to as Grandpa and Grandpa Dix because my last name is Dixon, and what I'm pretty sure was ironically as Grandpa Sunshine.
Do you think that your age or experience gave you an advantage?
I think it did because a lot of the kids, when they arrived there, had just gotten out of school. They were away from home for the first time, and they were doing what kids away from home do. And I was focused. I wanted to learn. I had done all my college wild stuff, and I was there strictly for the pursuit of knowledge.
And I'm assuming that you were older than some of your teachers.
There might have been one or two I was older than, but for the most, there were a few teachers my age, and those were the ones that I actually wound up having the deepest relationships with.
My guest is Jonathan Dixon, who's written a book called Beaten, Seared, and Sauced on Becoming a Chef at the Culinary Institute of America. You write that you took classes in courses like culinary math. And what's culinary math?
How many milliliters in an ounce, and, you know, metric system type things, and scaling recipes up and down. It was relatively simple stuff, but there was a lot of it, and I've always been something of an idiot with numbers. And
well, chefs tell me that one of the biggest problems of doing their jobs right is keeping within their budgets, because you can fill a restaurant every night and still lose money.
Sure.
If you just are buying more expensive things or not buying wisely.
Right.
So they teach you that at the school?
Well, one of the basic courses we took right at the beginning was product knowledge, which was how to choose the best, identifying all the different fruits, vegetables, herbs, how to choose the best examples of them. And during the classroom instruction, when you were actually in the kitchen learning, they were pretty maniacal about waste, and you'd get yelled at if you wasted things. And in the very early classes, when they were demonstrating how to chop an onion or cut up a potato or et cetera, you were not allowed to throw anything out. You had to keep your waste on your cutting board so they could come around and inspect.
And then what happens? That goes into stocks and things like that?
The potatoes often just got tossed, but the onions and garlic and shallots all went into stock or were sent to other kitchens.
I'm sure you had favorite classes.
I did.
Did they tend to be the hands-on classes?
Well, except for those interludes of academia, which is right at the beginning and then in the middle, it was all hands-on. And there was very little that you weren't doing every day.
So this is different than going to college. This is like taking only lab courses in college.
It's sort of. There was nothing very passive about the education at the CIA.
In your memoir, you briefly mentioned West Point as a reference to the rules and regulations at the CIA. Isn't West Point not all that far from Hyde Park?
I observe in the book that it's no coincidence that West Point is right down the river, because there was an almost boot camp sort of devotion to the rules and regulations and the way your uniform looked and what you had to wear, the length of your hair, your sideburns, et cetera, et cetera.
And then all that goes out the window when you go out and become a chef, because some of the most famous chefs dress rather eccentrically.
In shorts and orange Crocs, sure.
So what's the reason for having these rigid rules?
I think my theory is that, you know, like I said, you had all these kids who were away from home for the first time and kind of going nuts, except now you get flame and sharp knives in the mix, and I think it helps to have the discipline. And also, cooking does require discipline, and it requires focus, and I think that all the rules and regulations were designed to sort of, you know, foster that focus.
When you went to work in a restaurant afterward, did you feel that the chef was similar to the teachers you'd had, or do you learn different things in the real world?
Everyone has their own preferred method of doing things. When I went and did my externship in the middle of school,
That was at Tabla?
Yes, it was.
And you had a great chef, Floyd Cardoz, as your boss?
Yes. He did things a little differently than I was taught, but because I had been kind of given that foundation of basic skills, I was able to adapt what I did to the way they wanted it. At least I hoped I was doing that.
Well, is this like a college version of Top Chef, where you're given an assignment and then humiliated because the thing didn't turn out as well as you were supposed to?
Well, sometimes you're humiliated the whole way through the process as well, but it's not that dissimilar. I mean, we were operating within pretty tight time constraints at school, and the farther you went in your classes, the more constraints there were.
But you'd been a teacher. You taught creative writing at Pratt. Was it weird returning to the classroom this time as a student?
It was. I had spent time on the other side of the desk, so I was aware also that sometimes the browbeating was a bit of role-playing going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I suspect you also learned a bit about teaching because you'd already been a teacher. You brought certain attitudes, but then you saw things that you might have wished you could have applied when you were teaching.
Maybe I should have yelled more when I taught.
Was that it?
Maybe I should have been more of a screamer in the classroom.
You should have said stupid, like chefs often say, call you stupid and...
It never got that bad. It never got that personal. It was more, you know, how can you be this inept? How can you be this incompetent? Why do I get out of bed in the morning to teach you? I should just stay in.
Yeah, I had a friend who worked in some top restaurants, and he said every time he was told something like that, he reminded himself that others had been fired and he hadn't, so he couldn't be all that bad.
That's a good way of looking at it.
So you did this externship. That's part of the process of going to the CIA, and you were at Tabla, a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. It closed at the end of this past December.
But I'm assuming it's a major part of your education as a chef.
It was kind of like a forge where everything we'd learned up until that point got hammered home, because you were in a real life situation at that point.
How stressful is it?
It's pretty stressful because I was also pretty weak. I walked in, I was slow as molasses. I wasn't that good at doing many things at one time, and I had this huge list of things I had to do every day, all these different things I had to prepare and get ready for the cooks to use at dinner service that night. And it took me a long time to be able to have one thing going, be working on something else, have another thing going, you know, aside from that. And it was difficult. It was very hard.
The cooks are the people who are further advanced. The CIA has restaurants, doesn't it? So is that part of the process? Did you move up to the point where...
The last part of the curriculum right before you graduate is you used to have to work in all four of the school restaurants, but now you spend a longer period in two of them. And
so do you get to choose? I want to be
Italian. Was a lottery. I tried for the French and Italian, but I wound up with the American regional cuisine and the French.
You see parallels between cooking and music. You want to talk about that?
I see the parallels in that you work to develop your skills, you work to develop your reflexes and your imagination, and then you unleash them on demand.
But you also say that there are differences between cooking and baking, which are similar to the differences between jazz and classical music.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, jazz requires you to think on your feet. You're interacting with other musicians. Someone can introduce a phrase or a note or a different rhythm that sends the composition you're working on in whole new directions. It's a little harder to improvise baking the same way you do the same way you would with a culinary dish.
Because baking is about
measurements. It's a little more exact. Yeah, I mean there's a little more exactitude required of baking, I think, than there is.
And what did you prefer? Some people gravitate toward one and others to the other.
I gravitated toward the culinary side of things. Because I'd always been kind of an idiot with science and math, the exactitude of baking scared me.
Toward the end of your time at the CIA, you were able to observe master chefs compete for the Bocuse d'Or competition finals that are held at the CIA. Then
yes.
They go to Lyon for the final finals. So... Did you learn from watching some of the best chefs in this country work?
Well, these were the best up-and-coming chefs, mm-hmm. and the team that...
We never win. The United States never wins.
No.
It's always Sweden, I think.
Sweden and the Norwegians, mm-hmm. I think. But watching the focus and the intensity and watching the result of all the practice and dedication that those guys put in. And in Beaten, Seared, and Sauced, I focus on the team from 11 Madison Park, who were just incredible to watch that efficiency at work. And it was kind of a mind-blowing experience for me to see that dedication come to fruition.
But when you were at Tapley, you were just down the block from 11 Madison Park.
So. No, they shared building space.
So you could have watched them there as well. The chefs, the top chefs, are around your age. Did you feel discouraged by that?
Sometimes. I did feel that my age was a little bit of a hindrance, and I knew that I was never going to be, you know, Fran Adria, and was never going to be Danielle Belloud. But I also had never really thought that I was going to wind up in a restaurant when my education was over. I thought there were other directions I could take.
So you haven't applied what you learned at the CIA to restaurant work. You graduated last year.
Right. And I've been cooking privately for different clients in the city. And, you know, I wrote the book. I want to keep doing food writing. I want to keep getting more clients and see what develops out of that.
And I'm assuming you've changed the way you cook at home.
Yeah, the failures have become a lot more infrequent.
Would you consider returning to Martha Stewart?
I don't. I think I've done my time at Martha Stewart. I feel comfortable with the level of participation I had there.
Jonathan Dixon's memoir, Beaten, Seared, and Sauced, on becoming a chef at the Culinary Institute of America, is published by Clarkson Potter. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Leonard.